We hope you enjoy this recording of a live broadcast brought to you via the ETIM Network, the online, live, interactive division of Torah in Motion. For more learning opportunities, please visit www.torahinmotion.org.
Good morning to everyone and Shavua Tov. I hope you're all well and that you can all hear me well. Today we're going to take a close look at our next sugya, but before we do so, I'd like us to just take a look back at sugya number 4 that we studied last week together, and review what are the stages of the sugya and who are the Amoraim who participate, because sugya 4 creates the backdrop for the sugya that we will learn this morning. If you'll take a look again at sugya number 4, the pages that you downloaded from the site, you'll note who are the Amoraim who participate in the sugya number 4. We have in the first component, we have Rav and Shmuel from the first generation of the Amoraim. We have Rav Hanan bar Tachlifa in component number 5 from the second generation of the Amoraim. Then we have a story about Rav Huna from the second generation of the Amoraim. He's the famous Talmid of Rav. And then in component number 7, we have Abaye from the fourth generation in Pundadita, followed by, in component number 9 and 10, Rabbi Yochanan of Tveria, of the second generation, and Rabbi Hanan bar Abaye, who says in the name of Rabbi Pzat, who says in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Also, those are third generation and second generation Amoraim from Eretz Yisrael. So in other words, if we take an overview of this fourth sugya that we learned last week, we see that the sugya is based on an original memra of Rav Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan, and then interpolated in between the opinions of Rav and Shmuel on the one hand and Rabbi Yochanan on the other, we have second generation Bavel, third generation Bavel, and fourth generation Bavel. Right, this is what we learned last week. Now what's interesting to note is that if we exclude Abaye who's fourth generation Pumbedita, our sugya really ends up in second generation Sura with Rav Huna. Rav Huna, who made Kiddush and then his blew out, and when they brought his things to the garden of Rabbah, his son, then he would, where there was light, he would make Kiddush and eat something again. Sarah is asking about Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan is second generation Amora from Israel. He was the man in Israel. He was the Rosh Yeshiva in Tveria from 240 to 280. As Yisrael is telling us from Pesach, he's a second generation Amora. And anyone who was anyone in Israel, that's right, it's all in this book. Yisrael is holding up the summary of all of the Tanaim and Amoraim that we published. And for any of you that want it, you can just send to us and we'll send you a copy. It's not expensive. Now, in any event, in the fourth, thank you, Yisrael, for that display. Now, therefore, our sugya really is a first and second generation sugya, sugya number 4. Now, I mention this, I stress it, because when we begin to look at sugya number 5, which we're going to study today, we can see, first of all, by scanning exactly in its context, who are the Amoraim who appear in sugya number 5? Which Amoraim do we have, my friends? Well, in the first component, we have Rav Idi bar Abin, who sat down in front of Rav Chisda, and Rav Chisda sat down in the Beit Midrash and said in the name of Rav Huna. So where are we and when are we? Who would like to estimate where we are and when we are? That's right, Sara. Very good. We are in Surah. And when are we in Surah? Which generation? That's correct, Eitan. And Sara. Very good. Generation 2 and 3. Because Rav Ista is third generation, and his student, Rav Idi Baravin, is already late third. And so what we're talking here, we're in the third generation of Surah. How does that connect us to the previous Surya? How does this connect us to Surya number 4? Who would like to venture an answer? Well, it comes, that's Eitan said, it comes out of section 2A6 in the Sugya. That's correct. Very good, Eitan. Well done. That is Sugya number 4 in components 6A2 actually, 6A Aleph Shtaim, we have Ravuna, second generation Surah. And now in our Sugya we begin in third generation Surah, the next generation. The two Sugyot follow each other perfectly. But Abaye, who appears in the fourth Sugya, is fourth generation Pumbedita. He's really a late addition onto that Sugya and is kind of an insertion, but he doesn't belong to the body of the Sugya itself. Anyway, let's look at Sugya number 5. And this Sugya number 5 is really taking off where we left off at the end of Sugya number 4 in the topic. You recall that in Sugya number 4 there was a machloket between Rav Shmuel and Rav Yochanan about people that said Kiddush in the shul on Friday night, then they go home. What do they take home with them in terms of the mitzvah? So Rav said they didn't fulfill the bracha on Yayin. When they get home, they have to say Brei Pri Hagafen again. That is, that by changing their location, they're obligated again to say Brei Pri Hagafen. If they had stayed in the shul and had more wine to drink, they would have not have been required to say Brei Pri Hagafen again. But the Shinui Makom, the change of location, obligates them to a new bracha, according to Rav. But they did fulfill their mitzvah Kiddush, according to Rav. They don't have to say Kiddush again. They're Yotzei with what they heard in Shul. Shmuel says, Af Yedei Kiddush Lo Yasu. They didn't fulfill Kiddush either. Not Yayin and not Kiddush. And when they go home, they have to say the full Kiddush with Brei Pri Hagafen and Mekadesh HaShabbat, the way we do when we come home from Shul on Friday night. What did Rabbi Yochanan say? He said, not only did they fill the mitzvah of Kiddush, they filled the mitzvah of the bracha of Yayin. When they go home, even though they've changed buildings, possibly changed neighborhoods, nevertheless, when they get home, they do not have to say Brei Pri Hagafen again. They rely on the Brei Pri Hagafen that they heard in Shul. This is Rabbi Yochanan. And if you'll recall, the fourth Sugya ended in component number 11 with the bringing of a braita by the Sama de Gemara, which says, Shinui makom tzarich levareh, shinui yayin ein tzarich levareh, that if you change your place, that is, we don't know what place means, we're going to look at that in today's Sugya, but when you change your place, you have to say the bracha again. You don't rely on the bracha that you heard in the previous place that you were. But if you change the wine, you don't have to say Brei Pri Hagafen again. That is, if I say Kiddush over a certain wine, and then I bring another wine to the table, I don't have to say Brei Pri Hagafen on a second wine, even though it's different than the one over which I said the original Brei Pri Hagafen. Of course, our custom is today that if the wine, the second wine that's brought to the table, is better quality than the first wine over which I said Brei Pri Hagafen, then I will add another bracha, Baruch Atovi Amiti. But that's a separate bracha. That doesn't relate to our issue. Our issue is whether you have to say Brei Pri Hagafen and Kiddush again. So Rabbi Yochanan said you don't have to say either. But the braita contradicted Rabbi Yochanan, and that's how the Gemara ended at the end of Sugya 4. It's Yufta to Rabbi Yochanan, Yufta, that Rabbi Yochanan's position that you do not have to say Brei Priya Geffen again when you change your place, his position is refuted, and therefore the halakha is that one does. And that's where we pick up the sugya of number five. Let's take a look at the, in sugya number five, we're first going to take a look at the braitot. There are two significant braitot in this sugya. And then we'll look at the maimrot, and then we'll look at the Stoma de Gemara. These three phases in which one should learn Gemara, and we'll see what each phase is adding to our discussion. First, look at sugya number five, component number six. This is the first braita in the sugya. And the braita says, "Bnei chavura, if you had a group of friends, shayu misubim lishtot, and they'd gotten together, to drink wine together, and they got up from their misibah, and misibah means that they were all behisibah, they were leaning on their left. That is, they had established what's called a kiviyut seuda. They had all fixed their seuda as being a common seuda for themselves, and they were all lying down there together on their left-hand sides, drinking from the goblets on their small tables. And then they got up, let's likrat chatan or likrat kala. They got up because they heard outside a procession of a chatan or a kala. And of course there's a mitzvah, l'sameach chatan v'kala. So they leave where they're housed, and they go outside to escort the chatan or the kala. Kishehen yotzin, says the braita, when they go out, ein t'unin bracha l'mafreya. Kishehen chuzrin, ein t'unin bracha l'chatkila. When they go out, they don't have to say a bracha achrona. They don't have to say a bracha after the drinking of the wine. And they don't have to say, when they come back from the wedding procession, they don't have to say Brei Priya Geffen again. They just continue where they left off. But then the braita says, Bameh Devorim Amurim. In what case is this said that they don't have to say a bracha after or before? They just continue where they left off. When not the entire party went out to escort the bridegroom or the bride. They left someone belonging to their party at the drinking feast, and that maintains, as it were, the presence of the group. But if they didn't leave anyone behind, everybody to the man left the drinking feast to go out to escort the bridegroom or the bride. Then, when they go out, they have to say a bracha chrona before they leave, and when they come back, they have to say a bracha rishona before they drink wine again. What does this braita contribute to our understanding of when a interruption of wine drinking takes place, whether an additional bracha will be required? What has this braita contributed? Who would like to suggest an answer? Orally? Does this braita? Yes, that's right, Jeff. Requires a total shinui makom. But when we have a total shinui makom of all those who are seated together to drink, then when there's a shinui makom, sarich levore. You have to say a bracha again. This is in contradiction to Rabbi Yochanan. This is in contradiction to Rabbi Yochanan, as we saw at the end of the last sugya. Eitan asks one side question, if you may. Can we assume that this braita has two layers? First the story, and then the addition of the question, Bamed Vorim Amurim. Very good. Under normal, yes, we would. If we had no other braita, this braita would then be seen to have two layers, two rivadim. The first layer, which tells you the basic din, and then the Bamed Vorim Amurim, which seems to limit the original din and restrict its application significantly. This is, by the way, called an okimta. But this is not the only braita that we have, Eitan. And since we have another braita which is going to reflect on this one, let's take a look at it, and then we'll see what you see. Number seven, seven bet on the next page. Component 7 bets, we have the following braisa. Chamisubim, again, friends that were seated, that were lying down together for a feast. Ve'akru rak lehem lelech lebet haKnesset or lebet haMidrash. And they got up in order to go to the Beit Knesset or the Beit HaMidrash. Either they got up in the middle of their meal for Mincha, or there was a famous scholar giving a shir in the Beis Medrash, and they went to hear him, and they left their meal in the middle. Kishen yotzin ein tunin bracha l'mafreya. Kishen chuzrin ein tunin bracha l'chatchila. And similarly, in that case, when they leave, they don't have to say a bracha afterwards, and when they come back, they don't have to say a bracha before eating again. But Amar Rabbi Yehuda, says, and this is Rabbi Yehuda bar Eli, he says, Bandei Devarim Amurim, this din, what is its application? Bizman Shenichu Sham Mitzat Chavirim. When they left some of their party at the feast who did not go out to the Beit Knesset or to the Beit Midrash. Avalo Hinichu Sham Mitzat Chavirim. But if they didn't leave friends, some friends there at the feast, Kishen Yotzin Tunin Bracha L'Mafreya, Kishen Chuzrin Tunin Bracha L'Chatzila. Then if they didn't leave anyone, they have to say a bracha after their food went before they leave, and a bracha before their food when they come back. Now, Eitan, I ask you, please, adjust your question appropriately. What will you say now, Eitan? Do we have two layers? If we do, can you pinpoint them better? We're waiting for Eitan's response. May we have the envelope, please? He sees the layers in the Mishnah, the Tana and then Rabbi Yehuda. Yes, that's right. That now we know that we have two layers in this Mishnah. The first layer is the Stam Mishnah, which tells us the original din, and comes Rabbi Yehuda, and this is, of course, Rabbi Yehuda bar Eli, the Talmid of Rabbi Akiva from the Usha generation. And he's coming and delimiting this original din to a specific set of circumstances. Now, it's possible that Rabbi Yehuda bar Eli is telling us the original meaning of the first din, and it's possible that he's telling us a delimitation that he himself is suggesting. That's not clear. But what is clear from both baraitos is, as Jeff mentioned to us before, the minute that you have a complete shinui makom of the group, there must be a requirement for an additional bracha when they return. And this is in contradiction to what Rabbi Yochanan said at the end of the last sugya. Jeff is asking, is Stam Rav Yehuda always Rav Yehuda bar Eli? Yes, always, without exception. If it's Rav Yehuda Hanasi, it would say Rav Yehuda Hanasi. Eitan is saying, do we assume that Rav Yehuda is the anonymous questioner in the Braita? Well, that's a very, very good question. Take a look, for instance, at component seven Aleph and seven Bet in Sugya number 5. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says, Man Tana Akirot. Who is the Tana who teaches us this extra din about uprooted and some are left and some maybe are not left? Rav Yehuda. So you were Mechavein, Eitan, to the opinion of Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak the Amora, Kol HaKavod. That he identifies the Bamed Devarim Amurim in the first Braita with Rabbi Yehuda, who appears saying that in the second Braita. So that's very good. If we're already to the point where we're able to predict the statements of Tanaim and Amoraim, my friends, we're doing very well. All right. We learned the two Braitot in the Sugya and how they contradict the words of Rabbi Yochanan at the end of Sugya 4. Let's go back now and learn the Memrot in our sugya, the Memrot of the Amoraim. Starting with component number 1. Yatsav Rav'idi bar Abin Tamed Rav Chisda. Rav'idi bar Abin sat down in front of Rav Chisda, Medrash, before Rav Chisda, his teacher. V'yatsav Rav Chisda, and then Rav Chisda sat himself down formally in front of the group. The Kamar Mishmeda Ravuna, Shinui makom tzarich levarech, lo shanu ela mibayit levayit, aval mimakom lemakom lo. That when we say that the change of place requires a new bracha, that is only when it's from one house to the other. But when it's from one place to the other within the same house, that does not require a new bracha. That's what Rav Chisda says in Rav Huna's name. Now, take a look back at sugya number 4, at what is told about Rav Huna. In 6 Aleph Shtayim, we're told that when Rav Huna made Kiddush, and then his candle went out, and they brought his utensils to the garden house of Rabbah, his son, there was a candle there. He made Kiddush and tasted something. In other words, it's clear from sugya number 4 that when was it that Rav Huna required an additional bracha on Shinui Makom? When he moved from his own house to the house of Rabbah, his son. But presumably, if he had not moved all that way, but he had only gone to another place in his own house where a candle might have been burning, he wouldn't have had to say another bracha or another kiddush. And that's what we're told here in the name of Rav Huna by our Rav Chisda, that the only time Shinui Makom requires a new bracha is when you change buildings. But if you change places within one house, you don't have to. Eliyahu is suggesting that he's experiencing sound problems. Does anyone else have sound problems, or are you all hearing me? In any case, then maybe technical support can be of assistance. Okay, Eitan says, although that is an assumption, since we do not have Rav Huna's action, yes, that's correct, Eitan, we don't. But since we have Rav Chisda's edut about his teacher Rav Huna, and we have a case where Rav Huna acted in seemingly in accordance with that, it's a fairly good assumption. Now let's go on. And number two, in component number two, Rav Idi Bar Avin answers Rav Chisda, and he says, "Hachi tanina le v'matnita deve Rav Hina ve'amrila v'matnita." Rav Idi Bar Avin says, you know what? Rav Chisda, you have corroboration. Because in the Mishnah of the Beis Medrash of Rav Hina, and some say in the Mishnah of Rav Hina, it says like you. Just like what you said. That the only time Shinui Makom requires an ubracha is when you move from house to house. But if you move from one place to another within the house, you don't require another bracha. And then we have, in component number 4, we have the statement, Yatev Rav Chisda v'kamar mishmeid nafshev, that Rav Chisda said, then sat down at another occasion, sat down in front of the Beis Medrash, and said his own opinion about this. And what he said was, Shinui makom tzarich levoreh, v'advorim she'en zehunin bracha l'achrehen bim koman, avadvorim ha'tehunin bracha l'achrehen bim koman, that if you happen to be eating something that requires a bracha afterwards in its original place, then when you change a place, you would have to say a new bracha. But if you're eating something that does not require a bracha after it in its place, then you would need a new bracha when you go to the new place. But if you're eating things that require a bracha after eating them in their place, then you do not have to say a new bracha when you come back. And the reason for that is because you continue to be relying on what you did before. Eitan says, why would the Mimer say that Chisda said in the name of himself? Why not simply say that he said it? Why the self-attribution? Because number 4 is coming directly after number 1, you see? And number 1, Rav Chisda sat down and said in the name of Rav Huna. Now he says in his own name. That's what the self-attribution is. It teaches us the distinction between this Maimra and that reported by Rav Chisda in component number 1. So Rav Chisda is telling us that there's another important factor in whether you require a new bracha when you change your place. And that is, what exactly was the food that you were eating? What's the type of food that you were eating? Were you eating things that require a bracha after them in their place when you're done eating, or not? And that will determine whether or not you can rely on the previous bracha when you change your place and then come back. But Rav Sheshet, in number 5, what does Rav Sheshet say? Rav Sheshet says, Echad zeh ve'echad zeh tzarich levareh. That you have to say a bracha after a new bracha when you come back, no matter what it is that you're reading. Things that require a bracha afterwards in their place or not. Okay, and that's the end of the Amoreik Sugya. Now, what is this Amoreik Sugya adding to what we knew from Sugya number 4? And what is it adding on top of the Brisot that we learned? Who would like to suggest something? The Brisot spoke about groups, right? What are our Maimrot talking about? Our Maimrot seem to be talking about individuals, right? Not just about groups, that's right. Not just about groups, but about individuals. And we have two additional types of food. That's right, Teddy, two types of food. And also, it's adding two considerations that we did not hear about before. One is that means a different home, a different building. But if it's within the same building, it's not considered Shinui Makom. And the other is the types of food that affect the decision. So what you can see here is that as our subject proceeds from Tanayim to Amoraim, various factors are being added to the sugya and to the halakhic process here. Eitan is saying also differences between the preceding and concluding brachot. Yes, that is correct. And therefore you can see, here you see very clearly in the layers, Tanayi and the layers within the Amoraim, you see the development of the discussion that the topic of a new bracha is now splitting into all sorts of considerations that were not mentioned in the earlier layers. These considerations and calculations continue to grow and become more and more complicated until they are finally passed in the halakha at the close of the Talmudic period and the Gaonic period. Let's take a look now at the Stamma de Gemara of this sugya and see what it is contributing to this whole discussion. Take a look at number 3, component number 3. The Gemara here asks that when Rav Chista said in the name of Rav Huna that it's only from bayit labayit, but not from makom to makom, and then Rav Yehudi ber Avin told Rav Chista, hey, you know what? The Mishnah in Rav Hinak says like you. The Gemara then says in Kapona number 3, Ve'ela Ravuna Manita Kamashmana. Well, Ravuna was coming to teach me a Memra to say the same thing that I have already in a Mishnah, in a Braita? That's just, if Ravidi Baravi said that it's in the Mishnah of Rav Hinak, the Braita of Rav Hinak, Rav Chista should have known that. Why would he say something in the name of Rav Huna when it doesn't, not originally from an Amora, it's originally from a Braita. Braita is much stronger than an Amora, of course. So the Gemara answers in component 3 bet, Rav Huna matnita la, had not heard that Braita. And therefore, he said it out of his own logic. He that was his assumption, his svara. And he didn't know that there was a braita like this. This tells us, from a point of view of method, that one cannot assume that every Amora knew every braita. Not in any way, shape, or form. Many times the Gemara says, lo shmiele, he did not hear this braita, I never heard it, and therefore he couldn't relate to it. Okay, look at Kavona number 4. What is the Stamma adding? The Stamma is trying to explain to us the Memra of Rav Chista, his own Memra, where he said it depends on what foods you're changing your place for. The Gemara says, "My tama." What's the reason for that? Le kiv'a kama hadar. And he goes back to the original place, as it were, because if the food that he is eating require a bracha after them in their place, and you change place and then come back, you're really in the same place because you haven't finished the series that you started with the eating beforehand. Eitan is saying, hey, how can the Gemara just throw out that opinion on Ran Huna, when in other times you say, of course they know the teaching. It seems like a cop-out. Okay, that's a pretty strong remark. First of all, I don't know exactly why you say, Eitan, that we, other times you say, of course they know the teaching. Well, we generally assume that Amoraim learned and knew all the brisot that were available to them before they would say anything of their own. That's true. I think that's what you're referring to. And yes, that's correct. But that doesn't mean that all brisot were available to all Amoraim. And so the Gemara is not saying that Rav Huna definitely did not hear this brisot. But what it's saying is that it's likely that he didn't hear it, because if he would have heard it, he would have quoted it instead of saying it on his own. So it's not really a cop-out, it's an estimation of a situation that is problematic, that an Amora would ignore a Braita and say the same idea in his own name. By the way, I was asked today, I got an email today from a head of a yeshiva who asked me, on what basis do we say that in a later Amora will not contradict an earlier Amora, or an Amora will not contradict the Tana. On what basis do we say that? Would any of you like to weigh in on that? Because here, really, the question, how could Rav Huna said what he said in his own opinion, if it's in a Braita, is really based on this issue. How can he say something in his own name if it's already said by a Tana? So, I answered this Rosh Hashiva as follows. First of all, the assumption is that older scholars are closer to Sinai, and therefore that they have a more authoritative tradition than later scholars. And we don't need a source to prove this. It's a svara. It's just a good svara that you don't contradict older people. Of course, those of us who live in Western societies would have trouble understanding that. But in Eastern societies, it would be considered very bad form for a young person to contradict an older person. In any event, if one really wants a pasuk, you can take the pasuk, Sha'ala vichedcha zekenecha v'yomrulach. If you want to know something, ask your father and he'll tell you. Ask your elders and they'll explain it to you. In other words, that's the source of authority in Jewish life are our teachers and our ancestors. We don't assume that because we are younger and newer model, that we therefore know more than older people. Quite the contrary. Works the other way. In this light, I'd like to suggest to all of you an amazing book about parenting and teaching that I think every teacher or every parent should read. It's a book called Hold On to Your Kids by Dr. Gordon Neufeld. Neufeld. In this book, Dr. Neufeld discusses the nature of authority. And he posits that Western society has created a revolutionary society in that knowledge is horizontal. You learn from your contemporaries. You do not assume that those coming before you have more knowledge than you do. But he says traditional societies, and he quotes Judaism specifically, are societies that are vertical societies, where it's naturally assumed by the younger that the older know more than they. And he says in his book that virtually all of the problems we have in teaching and in families and in society in general are due to the passage from a vertical society to a horizontal society, which he bemoans. And I think that to understand why the vertical society structure is so critical to the psychiatric psychiatric and psychological health of the human being, I suggest classrooms, and it was translated into Hebrew. In Hebrew, it's called Lama Zekukach Mitzubach, and it's available. So Yisrael says, we have problems from foolish elders too. Okay, well that may be, but we're not talking about foolish elders. We're talking about our Chachamim and about educated older people. Okay, let's go on with the Sama de Gemara in Sugya number 5. We're now at component number 6. And here we have a very interesting question of the Sama de Gemara based on the first Braita. The Braita, of course, was said before Rav Kisda, three generations before him. But it's brought here in this Sugya, and then the Gemara says as follows. Nida katane akru raglehen. Eliyahu says, what of nanas agabe anak? That is, about the expression that we use that we are considered today like midgets standing on the shoulders of giants. Okay, that's fine, but when you, if you're a midget standing on the shoulders of a giant, and you can see a little bit further because you're standing on his shoulder, you mustn't forget what would happen if you put him down. Okay. You would barely be able to see his navel. Eitan says, could you point to Korach as an early example of the modern thinking? Yes, maybe you could. Maybe you could. Not a bad idea. Okay, let's go back. The Sama de Gemara says that from the fact that the first Braita talks about a case of akru raglehem, nichlal de v'dvarim ha-tiunim brachalach v'hem bim kuman askina, that we are obviously dealing here with a meal, something that requires a bracha achrona in its place. And therefore, we're talking about that kind of food. V'tama di nichusham zakenu cholehu, and the reason they don't have to say a bracha when they come back is only because they left certain members of their party there when they went out. That's the reason why they don't have to say a bracha when they leave or a bracha when they come back. But if they didn't leave an older or ill person there when they left, they didn't leave someone of their party there when they went out. We require a bracha when they leave and another bracha when they get back. Kasha Rav Kisda. And this poses a contradiction to Rav Kisda, because Rav Kisda said that if you're eating things that require a bracha in their place, something that requires, let's say, Birkat HaMazon or a bracha Mein Shalosh, then it doesn't matter whether you leave people there as part of your party or not. When you come back, you don't have to say another bracha because you're just continuing on with where you left off. This braita seems to contradict Rav Kisda and say the only time you don't have to say another bracha is only when you leave members of your party there. But if you don't, you're stuck. You've got to say another bracha when you come back. So comes Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, and he brings a second braita. That it's Rabbi Yehuda who says this, and that the Rav Kisda apparently is pointing according to the Chachamim at the beginning of the Braita. You see? That it's because, and this is based on what Eitan said, now we can say that this Baned Varim Amurim is specifically Rabbi Yehuda. It's not the Stam Mishnah at the beginning. It's another layer. Or it's a Tanakama who's Cholek on Rav Yehuda, we can then say that Rav Kisda has basis in this Braita, because he can go like the Chachamim. Rav Yehuda is not explaining the Tanakama, he's Cholek on the Tanakama. And therefore we have a Machloket Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. And if we have a Machloket Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim, then Rav Kisda can go like the Chachamim, and the Bala Kushia is asking from the point of view of Rav Yehuda. And this is brought to our attention by Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak in component number 7, when he brings the second Braita, and he says, this Braita, the first Braita is not a problem in the Sugya to Rav Kisda, because we have the second brisa that identifies the second. Now, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak is the fifth generation. Zablonian Amora. Fourth, fifth. He's a younger colleague of Rava. He's therefore two generations, approximately, after the Rav Chisda material. So the Breitzot apparently came in. Between the third generation and the fifth, and Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak responds. Point number eight. In Gemara number 8, the Gemara says, Elatama, David Ruchshein Chuzrin, Tunin Brachala Chatila. That the Gemara says, that based on this second Braita, we can see if you're eating things that require Bracha afterwards in their place, that then you don't require a Bracha when you leave or a Bracha when you come back. You can continue in the same meal. But if you're eating things that do not require a Bracha after them in their place, then even to the chachamim, here we see a braita contradicting Rabbi Yochanan. So now instead of using the braitos, we've upheld Rav Chisda because of the opinion of the chachamim and the braita, and now we're turning our targets from the braita onto Rabbi Yochanan. So the Gemara in component 8-bet, Gemara said, well, are you trying to destroy Rabbi Yochanan again? The lav mi ozvine chadazimna? We already destroyed Rabbi Yochanan at the end of Sugya 4. Why do you have to keep kicking him? He's down already. Don't kick a man who's down. Gemara says in 8-dimel, neima mehanamit davit yufta. We could say that also from here there's a dispute of Rabbi Yochanan. Not enough to kick him once at the end of Sugya 4. If you have another disproof for him from another Braita, give it to him again. So he'll stay down. But the Gemara in 8 Dalet says, no, maybe not. Amar lach Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan could say to you, notice, it says Amar lach, not Amar le. This is not Rabbi Yochanan speaking. This is the Gemara speaking in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan could say to you, Hu hadin de'afilu devorim she'ein tunin bracha lachoyen bim kuman nani ein tzrichin nevaret. V'hadi katani akru rad lehem lo'diacha kocho de'Rav Yehuda de'afilu devorim she'tunin bracha lachoyen bim kuman tam adinichu miktar chavirim avalo inichu miktar chavirim k'shen yotzin tunan bracha l'makoya k'shen chozrin tunan bracha l'chatzila. Rabbi Yochanan will say, no, not at all. This second price is not in the least bit a problem for me. Because you could say that the second bracha is dealing with things, even with things that do not require necessarily a bracha afterwards in their place. But this second bracha is coming to teach you how strident is the opinion of Rav Yehuda that even in the case of things that do not require a bracha afterwards in their place, that the only time that would be true is if you leave the part of the party there when you go out. But if you don't, then you would require a bracha when you come back. So in other words, Rabbi Yochanan is good, push away this kasha by saying the purpose of the second bracha is simply to tell me how strident is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Now Eitan is asking, when the Gemara tries to resolve all these contradictions, is it not sufficient to say that these rabbis simply held different opinions of the practical halacha? When you say all these rabbis, you're talking about whom? Rabbi Yochanan, Rav Huna, Rav Chisda, Rav Yehuda, the Amoraim. Well, you could certainly say that, but as you know, Eitan, as we've learned previously, one of the main functions of the Sama de Gemara is to attempt to resolve as many contradictions as possible in order to unify Shitot LaHalacha. The amount of arguments that we have in the system are less than what it appears to be, and this would then be poured into Halacha by to combine the Shitot, as it were, an integrated field theory of Halacha on the point that would go according to all of the Amoraim. And that happens in many areas of Halacha. Number 9. Tanya Kavatei de Rav Chisda, that we have a Braita, according to Rav Chisda, Chavirim Shayu Misugim Mishtot, Yain, Ve'aku Raglihem Ve'chazru, Ein Tzrichim Levarei. That Rav Chisda, it's just like Rav Chisda said, that friends who were lying down together to drink wine, to have a drinking feast, when they got up and then they come back, they don't have to make a bracha. And why is that? Because we're talking about things that require a bracha after them in their place, because yayin would require a bracha of achat me'ein shalosh. And therefore, when you come back, you can be considered to be one who's continuing with the original context of the meal, and therefore no additional bracha will be required. And with this, our sugya ends. So I think what we can summarize about this sugya is we can say that this sugya brings us additional information about the issue of shinui makom, both on the level of Tana'im and on the level of the Amora'im. And as the sugya progresses and more factors are factored into this halakha, the Sama de Gemara is going to take these different factors and the different shitot into an integrated approach to brachot before and after, and when you interrupt or move from place to place, a position that will try to take into account as many of the shitot of the Amoraim and the Tanaim that can be taken into account. And this then will become the bracha, the halakha that will guide us to our very day. And that is the conclusion of sugya number 5. So if I can ask of all of you, if you preparation for next Sunday, if you could take a look at sugya number 6 and sugya number 7, then we'll continue them. Are there any further questions about sugya number 5, which we learned today? Historical questions, method questions, content questions, in the whole, the halakha developed by the Rishonim and in the great code attempt to follow the integrative approach in the way that it handles the Tanaim and Amoraim. Okay, well, Shavuot Tov to everyone. Have a great week. Look forward to, we should have the Sorot Tovot. We should have lots of rain in Israel this week. There's lots of Shem today. You should all know that today we all began saying in Israel a special Shulah for rain and pray for Israel. Yes, Israel, you have a question, please. Yes, what is your question, Israel? About Britos? What do you mean, are they all authoritative? What do you mean?
Somebody calls down a valid brisa, will that always overturn in the moral?
Oh, brisos. You're talking about brisos. Brisa will always overturn in amora. Authoritative, unless some amora has evidence that the Braita being quoted is corrupt. And in that case, the Gemara will say, or will say, Yilma, that happens sometimes. But if that claim is not brought, it's assumed that the Braita is authoritative and takes precedence over any Amora. Okay, be well, everyone, and we'll see you same time, same station. on the Ikim Broadcasting Network next Sunday. Bye-bye.
We hope you found this recording a most enjoyable learning experience. We welcome your feedback. Please contact us at info@torahinmotion.org or at www.torahinmotion.org. Have a great day. Thank you.